This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Your Radio Doctor does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, products, physicians, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on Your Radio Doctor. Always consult your own physician. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, WPHT HD, WOGL, HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. It's time for the Delaware Valley's first radio doctor.
On call every Saturday afternoon at 5.
This is Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
Listen, 7 months or 10 months is an absolutely exceptionally short time frame to produce this vaccine.
Your health determines your life, your longevity, and your happiness. Let your radio doctor lead the way with your medical education. Your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie.
Good afternoon and welcome to Your Radio Doctor. I'm Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Happy summer, time to squeeze back into your bathing suit, and some of us may turn to a fad diet. Are fad diets healthy? Are they safe? Do they work? According to the CDC, about 13% of our population was obese in the 1960s. Today, that number has swelled to 43% of the U.S. population. So it looks as though the perfect fad diet hasn't appeared yet. Plus, rapid weight loss and then regaining the weight can be worse than not losing the weight at all. The other type of dieting is altering how we eat. Before we had refrigerators, people had to fast for 12 to 14 hours at a time without food. So maybe it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's hard to do forever. Plus, if you restrict your intake to 500 to 600 calories a day, you crave food even more. Joining us today is our dear friend, Emily Rubin. She's a registered dietitian. She's a licensed dietitian nutritionist. And congratulations, Emily. She just earned her master's in the degree in public health. She also has other hats. She's the director of clinical dietetics at the Celiac Center, the Fatty Liver Center, and the Weight Management Center at the Thomas Jefferson University Division of Gastroenterology and Hepatology. Welcome, Emily.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Today, we're going to discuss the keto diet, intermittent fasting, and the anti-inflammation diet, and more. Emily, let's start with fad diets. Are they bad for you?
The word fad, I guess there's not really an abbreviation for it, but it means sort of quick fix. So yes, it is, I don't like to use the word bad for you, but not recommended for you. Because the whole point of weight loss and healthy eating is we want it to be a long-term success. We don't want to sort of do the yo-yo dieting and, you know, lose 10 or 20 pounds to fit into a dress or look good in a bathing suit. You want to do it for overall health and for the rest of your life.
And I guess, too, a lot of times they lack important nutrients, and if they're too low in calories, they don't support certain body function. I remember back in the 80s, I was a GI fellow. We studied fad diets then, and one of them was the protein diet, or one of the diets, I forget which one in particular, and it was under 1,000 calories a day. And if your gallbladder is not stimulated enough with enough intake, it gets stagnant and it bumps your risk for gallstones. I mean, something that people might not connect.
Right. If you lose weight very quickly or do a very low fat diet, if you don't have enough fat in your diet, that actually can, like you said, promote gallstones and also cause hair loss, fatigue, just not feeling well, dehydration. So yes, there's the problem with a lot of the fad diets. There's not science to back them up. The few studies that have them are not, you know, are basically proving them that they are not healthy diets for you to follow. They're promoting some kind of book or specialty or sale to promote something that's really not recommended in the research world.
Exactly.
So it's really important that, you know, again, to, if you need to do lose weight, to see a dietitian or see somebody that specializes in a healthy, balanced diet for weight loss, because it does work.
So you mentioned if somebody's selling a book and there seems to be an additional plus for them, what fad diets should people avoid?
right off the bat.
Yeah, I don't like the any kind of like either master cleanse or the one food diet. If it's the cabbage soup diet, if it's the chicken broth diet, if it's now, I mean, even my boys' friends were telling me about like just doing the water fast diet that's come out where you're just drinking water for 3 days. I don't really understand the point. I mean, there are some these kinds of fasting kind of diets, you know, for religious reasons, but otherwise for overall health, it's not healthy because do you want to be dehydrated? Do you want to have a headache? Do you want to possibly go to the, you know, the ER for dehydration or ED? So it's like one of these things that we really have to be careful with because it's overall health that is most important.
And I also always hear you say there is no food that is bad. And when certain diets declare that this food or that food group is bad or off limits, everything in moderation, and as you say, if you drastically restrict calories or time of day when you eat, you got to wonder about that because it's not sustainable and you pay a price when you do drastic measures. Yes.
I mean, also when you decrease your calories, you do these calories that are under 1,000 or these diets under 1,000 calories per day, it actually slows down the metabolism. So it means your body's not going to burn calories as effectively. So the minute that you overeat or eat something that you shouldn't be or too much of something, you're going to gain the weight back. Because initially, always weight loss in the beginning, at least within the first 2 weeks to a month, is going to be water weight. It's not, you know, and it's going to be, and then also if you lose weight too quickly, you're going to lose muscle instead of fat. So that's not a goal either.
And they call that skinny fat, yes?
I guess so. Skinny
fat. I think that's the term. No, but if people hear nothing else today, if you lose weight precipitously, or you know, you really cut down on calories, and you say, "Okay, I'm giving you 900 calories a day, little body," and you lose the weight, but then, as you said, the motor slows, and the next time you put a piece of bread in, it doesn't metabolize it as quickly,
right,
and you gain weight quickly. You start back where you were.
Because a lot of these diets that restrict certain food groups, so there's not only just the whole fasting diet or not intermittent fasting, but fasting diet that actually, oh, let me go back. Can I go back to that? Not just the one diet where it's just the cabbage soup or liquid diet, but there's also the different kinds of diets that are restricting food groups, like the keto diet, like the anti-inflammatory diet, like the Whole 30. The big trend is not to have any carbohydrates. It's only protein, chicken, turkey, fish, and some vegetables and very little fruit and no dairy. So where are you getting your calcium from? Where are you getting your fiber from?
Mm-hmm.
Where are you getting your B vitamins from? And again, you know, you miss those foods and they're important. It's an overall health and balance.
So let's start with the keto diet, because that was getting a lot of attention, I think probably before intermittent fasting. Tell us what that means, please.
Yeah, so the keto diet, it basically, as it came out, I think we were researching like in the 20s, and it was initially, and it is still indicated, because I do have patients that come to me every so often, it's indicated for actually pediatrics for epilepsy. Mm-hmm. So there are studies, especially in pediatric, but they have to be monitored well, and it's still short term, because you need these kids to grow, is to, you know, follow this specific diet. So it's 70% of your calories from fat. So that's oils, nuts, olives, bacon, butter, mayonnaise, 70%. So that's a lot. And 20% of protein and only 10% carbohydrates. So you might be allowed a piece of bread a day, if that, or one piece of fruit, because the fruit is actually considered a carbohydrate. So it's extremely very restrictive. And again, the minute you put your body in this kind of like ketosis, which sometimes they recommend you get these ketone strips to make sure that you have ketones in your urine, which is something that I wouldn't want, but you know, as a dietitian and a healthcare provider, but what patients are looking for, people are looking for to have that, because then it's showing that they're losing weight and they're putting their body sort of a different kind of metabolism where you're using fat as fuel versus carbohydrates, mm-hmm, which is the primary.
So if somebody's going to go on a run, or they're in a marathon and they want quick energy, the food group that's metabolized most quickly is always carbs, right?
Exactly.
So we say if you eat a lot of carbs, you're going to store your fat. So somebody says, hey, ketosis means we're going to break down fat, right? And we want to eliminate carbs so that, you know, eat all the bacon you want and eat all the meat and cheese and all that really saturated fatty food items. And then you'll use that for your metabolism. Well, as you say, and you're going to lose muscle mass as well. But the long-term risk, it has to bump your risk for cardiovascular disease.
Yes.
It can lower your blood pressure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it depends. I mean, everybody, again, I always say it's never one size fits all, but I'll give you one of my examples that I actually teach the fellows is I had a young girl come to me and she was triathlon and she was looking at it more for, she wanted to control her weight because she was an athlete in college. So she was following the keto diet and her cholesterol went up to 500. Her over 500. Her LDL, which is a bad cholesterol, went up to 454. And her HDL cholesterol was very low. It was under 30. So I told her the next triathlon that she does, she might not make it. You know what I mean? Because, they're scary numbers. So we actually, we pulled her off of that diet. I mean, she was having 12 eggs in the morning. I mean, it was like Michael Phelps, swimming. But it was just way too much. Michael Phelps also had the carbohydrates, where she cut them all out. So we switched her to a Mediterranean-style diet for 3 months, and her numbers became normal. And her weight still stayed the same, and she had more energy.
Wow. That's incredible. Because... now, I wonder why it lowers blood pressure. Because of dehydration?
I mean, yeah, it could because of, it depends. It depends on the kinds of, again, of if you're following this, old school style, which you're having bacon grease and mayonnaise, or if you're doing the newer, if I'm going to have a keto style diet, patients want to be on it. Of course, I do the more plant-based and healthier fats like olive oil, olives, avocado oil, things like that versus the higher fat, the saturated
fat. I know it can also lead to kidney stones.
Exactly.
So they're the kind of things...
And then it could oxalate in calcium. So the keto and even Atkins, keto and Atkins are basically the same. They call keto the Atkins diet on steroids. That's what I've heard. It's a higher percentage of fat, but yes, especially males tend to sometimes be more prone to, well, I guess women too, but I've seen this more common, actually gout is what I can see, what I do see complications with the keto and the Atkins diet.
Really? So I guess that's why they're called fad diets, because like fashions, they come and go, they're popular for short periods of time. They're not usually backed by science, and it's hard to stick to them for very long. So let's talk a little bit about the grapefruit diet. Like you said, any one food diet is going to raise your antenna because no food has everything you need, right?
No, exactly. I mean, grapefruit's giving you, vitamin C and some fiber, but how can you just eat one food for 7 days, 10 days? It's just not sustainable and comfortable, and you're going to have headaches and you're going to feel tired. Plus, it could also just spike your blood sugars too. You have no protein along with that. And again, you are going to lose muscle and water weight. So it's not ideal. I mean, I understand the concept of sometimes doing certain fasts based on religious reasons. But otherwise, and even if you do that, I still recommend, I've had a couple patients, I don't know when Ramadan is. I think it is coming up, isn't it? Or did it already happen? That is another time when I actually talk to patients to try to make their diets. They're only fasting during the day, but try to make their diets more balanced at the time that they can eat it, just to make sure to prevent a diabetes or cholesterol and things like that.
So some of the other one food diets are cabbage soup. I guess people think fiber is good for you, so I'll just use some chicken broth, put some cabbage in there.
Yes, diarrhea, right.
What's the one you were with boiled eggs? You were talking about Michael Phelps or the marathoner.
Oh, no. So Michael Phelps ate about 10,000 calories a day when he was in the Olympics.
Sure.
But he was eating five eggs and then pancakes and whole grain toast. I mean, he had the carbohydrates. My particular patient, who also was an athlete, cut out all those carbohydrates and was just functioning on all the protein and high fat and wound up sort of bottoming out and having high cholesterol. So that's the difference.
And how about bone broth? What are we hearing about that? What's the mindset? Protein?
Yeah, so bone broth, I love it. I call it the gem of a food. And I've actually recommended it multiple times for my patients who have no appetite, because the benefit of it, or even to try to get extra protein when you can't, is it's made from, the collagen of the bones. But instead of just having regular chicken broth, it has 8 to 10 grams of protein in it for about 60 calories. So you're getting... I recommend cooking with it, adding it to soup as your soup base, marinating in it. It's actually one of the best things or just sipping on it throughout the day too, if you want to get some extra protein that's 100% natural. And you can make it yourself too. It's very time consuming, but it is an option.
So it's nice if you have a little bone broth as a side, but not to do strictly bone broth.
Not to do it strictly as, at least, if you think about it, at least the bone broth is giving you protein as a side, as maybe doing bone broth and why don't we combine bone broth with cabbage and have great food for dessert, right?
Severe food restrictions, especially if you dip below 1,000 calories a day. We already talked about gallstones. The other thing is, your liver might think, I'm on a deserted island, I'm going to hold on to the fat that I have. So people that are overweight can get fat deposits in the liver, get fatty liver. But people who lose weight precipitously are at risk of fatty liver too, right? Because the liver gets confused and said, I better hang on to the food I have before it swims away. And so fatty...
It depends on what particular item. Of course, you're seeing it's like MASH now because it's metabolic syndrome and Matt Folda, they changed it because of the complications of it. I just went to like a meeting about it last week. So That's sort of interesting, because it's like when you lose weight, if you lose 10, 15, you know, the more weight you lose, sometimes that does definitely bring down the liver enzymes. But again, it is all about the balanced diet, because the liver doesn't like the yo-yo diet.
Exactly. Exactly. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, the paleo diet.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, exclusively presented by Independence Blue Cross. If you have a question for the medical mailbag, just send a note to doctor@yourradiodoctor.net.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Hey, welcome back to Your Radio Doctor. Our guest is Emily Rubin, the Director of Clinical Dietetics at Jefferson University Hospital's Division of Gastroenterology and Hepatology. She's also in charge of PR for the Philadelphia Academy of Dietetics and Nutrition. Emily, we were just talking about fad diets and the keto diet. We learned a lot from your discussion there. We talked about one food diets and how they can be limiting and benefit. Let's talk about the paleo diet. It's short for Paleolithic, right? When we talked about hunters and gatherers, let's go from there.
With the cavemen, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this one is a little bit better because it does add some fruits to it, as opposed to the other ones have no fruit. It doesn't have dairy in it. It does have some nuts and beans, which is good as well. There's a couple of different kinds of paleo. There's paleo and there's the AIP paleo, which is like an anti-inflammatory, which is a little bit more restrictive. But again, it still does cut out all the grains in the diet. But again, we can get your carbohydrates at least through, from fruits and not starchy vegetables, but some vegetables as well. But again, it's making sure that you're not eliminating dairy, because you have to still get your calcium.
Mm-hmm. But it looks like with the paleo diet, if you're a caveman, you're going to look for meat and eggs and things you find in nature. So half the calories are from lean animal foods. I guess that means meat and eggs, fruit, as you say, non-starchy veggies. I think that's an important distinction. Unsaturated fats.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you could eat. Oh, yeah. People want to know what non-starchy veggies are. They're broccoli, asparagus, cauliflower. So peas, corn, and potatoes squash are considered starchy vegetables. So people don't always say peas and corn are starches. So you cannot have them.
But I mean, what's interesting is the paleo diet is touted to lower risk of heart disease and diabetes and cancer, but it eliminates the whole grains, which are associated with lowering these same risks. So do they, smart each other?
I think the diabetes part of it, because I think you're going to be, if you're cutting out grains, you're going to be eating lower carbohydrates unless you're eating a lot more fruit. It's also doing the unsaturated. It's interesting. They recommend the meat and the chicken, but then they want the unsaturated fats and saturated fats. Saturated fats are only found in animal-based products. So then maybe the newer paleo, again, is adding more plant-based fats. So adding avocados and olive oil and olives versus that whole thinking with the meat and chicken. So because they want, not using butter and bacon grease for your fats. So that might make a little bit of a difference. And if you eat less carbohydrates, it's going to lower your triglycerides and it's going to, help with your diabetes because your blood sugars are going to be lower. But it's just about portion control and not feeling deprived. And, I have patients, okay, I want a piece of bread. So then I tell them, well, this is the bread you can eat. They do make, a bread that is one of my favorites. There's a whole line of it, but it's these lower calorie, high protein, high fiber breads that make you feel full, that meet, carbohydrate content that you can fit into somebody that's, for diabetes and or weight loss.
And you make a good point, because it's about feeling full sometimes. So if you, instead of having, another snack while you watch TV, get a glass of, cold water and squeeze some lemon into it and sip on that. And maybe that'll, cut out a bedtime snack. There are ways to.
I usually recommend if you, obviously if you feel hungry to drink, even they recommend to drink about 8 ounces of water 30 minutes before you eat and to try to drink before you eat. But that thinking too is, if you feel really hungry and you're getting into the snack moment, so a lot of times maybe on paleo, you might be starting to eat like nuts, and nuts are healthy, but one tablespoon is 100 calories. So if you're going to eat a half a cup of them, you're at 500 calories. I usually tell my patients to then eat a meal. try to eat like a salad with grilled chicken, or, you know, I guess if we're doing one of these paleo, if we try the low carb bread, let's see if you're really physically hungry. Because if you're physically hungry, the meal is going to satisfy you more than a handful of nuts, and it's going to be less calories, essentially.
Right. That's a good point, because sometimes I think people, if they don't eat a meal and they just graze, they think, oh, I didn't eat anything today. It's easy to lose track when you graze and you have a handful of nuts, or you have it in your car, or you're making dinner and you snack on this or that. Yeah.
Grazing is the number one when I got certified in obesity management, grazing is the number one reason why our patients with bariatric surgery gain the weight back, because they're never able to eat a lot at once. Well, if they do it correctly, you know, they don't stretch out their pouch. They're never really able to eat a lot. In the beginning, they can hardly eat at all, but then they figure out how to get these bites of food in. So they might be getting that hoagie, that 12-inch hoagie, and they might eat that throughout the whole day. So they wind up getting these extra calories in. So it is interesting, because they, you know, they're never really sitting for a meal. Like there's a bunch of different behavior techniques. There's also sitting down eating versus, you know, I notice if I'm eating on the run, I'm not going to feel as full as if I actually sit down with my family.
Yes.
Or sit down for a real meal.
And behavior pattern, like if you are watching TV and you want a cookie, get up, go get the cookie, sit down, eat it. And if you want a second one, but you don't want to miss that that next part of the football game, you'll wait. Instead of bringing the whole bag and sitting and eating, up every time you want one. So let's spend some time on intermittent fasting. That's the hot topic, I think, and deserves a lot of, there's so much detail to it. And I know there are different ways that, and all involve splitting the day or the week into eating and fasting periods. And fasting means absolutely no food. You can drink zero calorie water, which most water has no calories, unless it's from the Schuylkill. So water or herbal tea or black coffee. And the most popular method is 8 hours of eating, 16 fasting. Let's talk about that 16-8.
So that might be people's normal lifestyle. Hey, yeah. I don't eat breakfast, and then I eat lunch. You know, I eat lunch, I'm eating between 12 and 8. The best part of that diet with the 16-8 is there's a cutoff time. So, okay, you might lose weight because you're not eating 12 hours. You know, you're not eating 12 hours. You're stopping eating after 8 or 9 o'clock. But again, as with any kind of diet, people figure out the easy way out. And they're like, oh, you know what? I'm going to wait till 2 or 3 o'clock to start my meal. So going from 3 to 10 or 4 to 11 is not going to be the recommended. That's not what our body should be eating, because our metabolism slows down after 6 or 7.
There you go.
And again, you're having reflux and things like that. It's just not ideal to be eating that time of day. So it does benefit it, because, again, the cutoff time. It's also, what are you eating during those 8 hours? Mm-hmm. If nobody's evaluating, and if you're eating what you were, if you're eating still McDonald's meals or, you know, fast food, or, you know, or not counting calories, you're eating balanced. You want to make sure you're eating balanced within those 8 hours.
Sure.
As well, you know, eating your fruits, vegetables. Again, I recommend dairy or calcium sources. All these diets cut out calcium. So you have to figure out, if you don't want to do, you know, cow's milk, you can do oat milk or almond milk or pea protein milk. And there's all the different kinds of, like, lower sugar. There's Greek yogurt, which I think is great. And they even make lower sugar almond-based yogurt. So that's important to get in your fruits and vegetables as well.
So I just want to reiterate something you said a minute ago about time of the 8 hours. The later you eat your dinner, you know, the later you end the 8 hours, the less benefit. Am I right about what you just said?
I mean, okay. It depends. Studies might contraindicate that, or, you know, contraindicate that. But at the same time, me personally, or subjectively, or even through my own research, it doesn't work that way. I mean, my patients do better when they eat earlier in the day. When they're eating later at night, chances are they're not choosing the healthiest foods, and they do struggle losing weight.
Yeah. They tend to be fattier and saltier. Food.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, my night shift workers have the hardest time losing weight, because that's just not normal to be up at night, sleeping during the day and eating at night. It just, you know, that's not normal for our bodies.
So obviously the benefits of intermittent fasting, weight loss, if you lose weight and body fat without restricting calories. But as you say, if you eat all 10,000 calories in 8 hours, you're not really helping yourself. But so within reason, if you limit the time, it's found to decrease insulin resistance or make insulin more effective and protect against type 2 diabetes. Is that a pretty acceptable?
I think a lot of it is with the whole weight loss. If you lose weight, that's right. What most of these diets would do. That's my thinking. If you're not going to lose weight, it may not. And it's also most times these intermittent fasting is very, it's not always, it's usually not just done as, okay, I'm just going to eat between 12 and 8. You're following some kind of diet 9 to 10 times. It usually is paired with a keto or paleo diet. That's how it's written in literature. And that's how, you know, it's recommended in books or on the internet. It's combined. So that's the whole point.
Well, I know the research is in its early stages, but there's a suggestion that it might help with brain health because in rats, it increases a certain brain hormone called BDNF that can aid in the growth of new nerve cells. We'll have to see if that holds any water. But
I don't know. I think doesn't calories feed our brain and the right kind of nutrition, like olive oil and nuts? Doesn't matter if we eat them in 8 hours or eat them later, or you know what I mean, or eat them within 10 hours instead of 8. I will mention the other diet, the other part of intermittent fasting is the other, it's called a 15, I'm sorry, 5 days. So the five, so the 5-2 plan. So there's 7 days in a week. So basically the 2 days you're only eating 500 calories and the other 5 days you're eating how you would normally would eat. So that, I mean, the hardest thing with that is how do you go from eating 500 calories and then the next day, oh my God, I have to, or 2 days, and then I have to go back to that. I mean, that part's easy, but then how do you get back to the 500 calories? You're going to be hangry. Right. You know what I mean? When you're going off. And the whole point of that too, that kind of diet, it confuses the body. And I usually, when patients plateau, like these kinds of recommendations are good, not this one, but you know, maybe having a cutoff time or, you know, eating your breakfast at lunchtime or your dinner at lunch, you switch things around to make your body more productive. That I recommend, not necessarily going to these extreme kind of diets. Mm.
So I'm going to zip through the downsides. Some of the things you mentioned, you can become hangry. And I guess on the days that you're fasting, you can be fatigued, feel a little dizzy, have difficulty concentrating. Plus you're adjusting to a new schedule. What if the 2 days you have planned happen to be like a wedding or some special day and you're there and you can't eat, or you say, I'm going to mess up my whole routine? It doesn't seem very sustainable. But then some people overeat during that window that we mentioned, and fasting might interfere with certain medications that require food intake or require blood sugar levels. So talk to your doctor before. Talk to a registered dietitian. But I want to get to the recent announcement, or it was a poster at a scientific session in March of this year in Chicago. The American Heart Association, they had an epidemiology and prevention / lifestyle, cardiac health, cardiometabolic health. What did that tell us about 20,000 U.S. adults, about average age 49, that those who followed the 8-hour time-restricted eating schedule, what did we learn from that study?
Yeah, that they were, that 91% of them were at risk for developing some kind of cardiovascular incident. So yeah, that actually...
Or they bumped the risk of, by 91%.
Yeah. So that's the big thing now is, oh my God, if I follow this diet, am I now going to have a heart attack? You know, so it's like, but you know, they didn't look at the quality of their food. It was funded by the American Heart Association too. They didn't know if there's any other risk factors. There's a lot of questions that needed to be asked by just saying, did they just follow this diet? The people in this study, I think most of them are either overweight or obese. So that's also going to put you at risk for cardiovascular. And then how many different fad diets are they following? If it was the intermittent fasting, were they following paleo? Were they yo-yo dieting?
Good point.
There's so many different reasons why, you know, I mean, it was a generalized study why this high stat is not actually correct, but it did scare people a little bit. Hey, maybe I shouldn't be doing these crazy, you know, strict diets like that. Maybe that there's something there, you know, there's some research based on.
We would hope that they compared heavy people who were doing the 8-hour restriction to other heavy overweight people who were eating the regular 12 to 16 hours a day. Either way, they compared them to people who were eating 12, 16 hours a day, and found that they were not only not living longer, but had this 91% higher risk of death from cardiovascular. And if they stretched it to 10 hours, there was still a 66% risk. But then they said if they stretched their eating to longer than 16 hours, it lowered their cancer risk. I don't know how
I don't know what kind of, again, you have to
tell that without screening and testing everybody. Right, right. So interesting. I mean, it's good to be aware of it. And we'll have to see as the information continues to be accrued. Let's take a little break to listen to this week's Real Champion. Your Real Champion. I call this segment RSVP to an invitation to volunteer. They say there's no such thing as true altruism. When you show kindness, donate time or money, it helps someone in need, but in a good way, it also makes you feel better. That's the philosophy of RSVP, a nonprofit organization that offers programs connecting more than 1,200 individual volunteers with the vulnerable populations in their local communities. RSVP has a brilliant dual mission. Programs offer support to those in need, and they improve the social, physical, and emotional health of the volunteers who have that true passion to improve the lives of their neighbors. RSVP, just like it sounds, offers an invitation, in this case, an invitation to make a difference. For over 50 years, RSVP volunteers have been providing education and wellness support to community members in Montgomery, Delaware, and Chester counties, and a portion of Philadelphia. The headquarters is located in King of Prussia. Volunteers come to RSVP where they're matched to programs based on their interests, skill sets, and availability. I had a wonderful conversation with Maria Sampson, their corporate relationship manager at RSVP, and I was truly impressed by the extent of their services. To really help understand the breadth of their support, I'd like to briefly list some of the many programs offered by RSVP, and they're all free. Family literacy. Reading coaches go into classrooms to read to children in the Head Start program. That includes workshops for the parents, too. And each child in the Head Start program gets 6 new books so he or she can start a library at home. Elementary literacy. To improve the reading skills for children in K through grade 5 in the classroom or virtually in over 30 school districts, children are selected by the teacher, a reading specialist, or the family, and a reading coach focuses on fluency, comprehension, and has the child read aloud to peers to build his or her confidence. There's a virtual program called RAS, Reading from A to Z, that pairs a coach with a child for 30 minutes once or twice a week, which often leads the volunteer to become a mentor for the child. My Free Tutor. This has more of a STEM focus. A virtual math tutor helps students from grades 3 through college. Career Exploration Plus. An entire library of videos with information for middle school and high school students about possible careers, opening their eyes to possibilities they may never have considered. It's on the RSVP website, and it's available to the public. The Digital Equity Program. I love this one. It helps seniors and adults navigate their electronic devices. It started when seniors were isolated during the pandemic, and now it connects folks with all kinds of resources, helping to access groceries, do telehealth, mobile banking, and more. There are even 5 modules which discuss internet safety, web browsers, how to use email, apps, and Zoom. The PA Meta program, that is really important. It offers Medicare counselors to seniors in Montgomery County to help them navigate through the different plans. The Volunteer Executive Consulting Program, or VEC, offers free managerial support to nonprofits to help fulfill their missions. It might help them start a board, do a business plan, or even help with grant writing. And maybe the biggest program is the Volunteer Services. RSVP recruits volunteers for over 150 nonprofit agencies who don't have enough manpower to do their work, like Meals on Wheels, food pantries, thrift shops, even senior centers. The RSVP board includes members with a very diverse array of professional backgrounds and talent, but I have to share a little more about Maria Sampson, who's a great ambassador for RSVP. After graduating from Villanova, Maria spent 12 years accruing experience in the banking world. She then stepped away when her children were in school, but still dedicated time to volunteering. She spent so much time at her children's school, Pope John Paul II Regional Catholic Elementary School, that eventually they hired her to create a comprehensive development program for marketing and fundraising. After 11 years, she then came to RSVP, but still invests time as a volunteer at her parish, where she just helped to create a beautiful legacy wall with the history of their church and parish. Maria has a sincere love of helping children and seniors, and she's meant to be right where she is, at the heart of RSVP. She has found her calling, and so many people are better for it. We salute you, Maria Sampson, and all the volunteers, staff, and board members at RSVP, your real champions.
Today's edition of Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross, can be enjoyed anytime, anywhere, at your convenience. Just download the Odyssey app and search Your Radio Doctor. It's health education on demand.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, now Saturday afternoons at 5, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC.
Welcome back to Your Radio Doctor. We're learning so much with our guest, Emily Rubin from Jefferson Health, about fad diets. Boy, we just learned so much about intermittent fasting, and data will be continue to be collected and learn from it. But how about the Master Cleanse? Wasn't it Beyonce who reported losing 20 pounds for Dreamgirls in maybe 2006? And the liquid-only diet, if I have it right, it's a concoction of water, lemon juice, maple syrup, and cayenne pepper for 10 days. That would cleanse me. I think I would get sick from above before I... Oh, no thanks.
Yeah, there's that one. There's also like the celery juice one. There's the hydrogen water. There's an Ozempic, or like drinking oats and with the cayenne pepper, olive oil adding cayenne pepper. It's all these sort of, again, it's that quick fix thinking, let me drink this to lose weight. Like she probably needed it for Dreamgirls. She needed to fit into a dress and do a part. So what does that tell you? Obviously, it's not going to be something that's long term and could be, again, losing nutrients, having a headache, feeling tired. You know, adding these, all these foods that we're mentioning, adding them into your diet as a daily part of your diet would be great. There's so many health benefits as opposed to just doing just the drink.
But the whole thing is when people throw around words like detox, no one can prove or disprove that. Perhaps that kind of a combination can mess with your microbiome and make you empty your bowel more. I've never heard of maple syrup and cayenne pepper making you evacuate more, but okay. But it's insufficient nutrition, and you have a liver and two kidneys to detox for you. We don't need to drink some strange.
By eating a balanced diet, cutting out, you know, eating less fast food, less processed food, drinking more water, cutting out alcohol. Yeah. That's your natural way to detox, not taking these kinds of drinks and even taking supplements. People will buy the dieter's tea and these, that I'm even more worried about because that actually can cause low potassium and really affect your electrolyte levels and put you into the hospital. And then some of these detoxes contain, which I think we've talked about in the past, the green tea extract, which could cause acute liver failure. And turmeric, the high doses of turmeric with cayenne pepper combined also has been shown to cause acute liver damage.
Goodness.
So there are
so
two things.
Turmeric and cayenne pepper combined can cause liver damage.
In a supplement form, either a pill or in a powder, not necessarily you cooking with it, because I don't think you could add that amount at one time without like choking.
And not drinking green tea, but the green tea supplements to excess can cause acute liver failure.
Yes. I think like if you drank 12 to 15 glasses of green tea, that could be equivalent, which I mean, some people would be doing that. I've seen them walk around with the Wawa green tea. So anything in excess, you know, our bodies just can't break that all down.
Yeah, life is a balance. So gluten-free makes me crazy because people think gluten means they're eliminating carbs, and you are. But the whole point is, unless you have documented celiac disease, which means your bowel has a sort of an allergic reaction to gluten, and we know gluten is found in wheat, barley, and rye, not oats. Wheat, barley, and rye. So people that have celiac disease have to avoid gluten. But when a celebrity like Gwyneth Paltrow says gluten-free is healthier and it promotes weight loss, it confuses people because maybe she's lost weight for another reason. Maybe she runs 10 miles a day. Who knows? But didn't you tell us that the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health shows there is no evidence for this claim?
No, exactly. If you look at some of the gluten-free carbohydrates, if you choose either the breads or the muffins or the bagels, if you're eating any of those grains, they're actually more calories because gluten-free flour is denser, more sodium and more fat. In order for it to be edible, they have to add fat because it doesn't make it taste better. Exactly. So, and even more sodium. There's multiple studies on them. The processed gluten-free foods are actually worse than the regular foods. I mean, that being said, I think when people are following the gluten-free diet again, the whole point is maybe they're eating less, they're trying to eat less processed. So it might be that whole combination of eating more whole foods versus eating more processed foods. But if they're going to eat the processed gluten-free foods, it totally defeats the purpose. But people follow it again because if they're gluten sensitive or against, you know, celiac, like a true autoimmune disease, gluten sensitive if you have, you know, developed GI symptoms with it. But there's people that follow it because, you know, migraines. They also do these different online allergy testing, which my patient did today. He's like, I spend $500 for it. I'm like, okay. And you know what I mean? Like, it's not accurate. It's accurate for, you know, food allergy testing for anaphylactic. If you're going to have hives and your throat to close, it's fine. But not for food sensitivities. Eat the food and see if it bothers you. That's the only thing that works.
Well, I've had patients, and again, I'm not a nutritionist, but I've had patients in conversation say, well, I had this or that GI issue. And the definitive way to diagnose celiac disease is with a biopsy of the duodenum, the small intestine, right? We know that. But people think they could have normal blood tests. Well, sometimes the blood tests take years to become abnormal. So if you have normal blood tests, you might still have celiac. But if you don't have celiac, as you say, when you go on a gluten-free diet, you could be missing really essential nutrients. So if you do have celiac and you do need to be on the gluten-free diet, you must be monitored on a yearly basis to make sure your levels of vitamins and all those good things are good. But if you have another autoimmune condition, celiac is an autoimmune condition. But if you have thyroiditis or Crohn's disease, that doesn't mean that gluten-free is going to help you necessarily. Right,
exactly. That's it's not another place. Some may have a sensitivity, but not necessarily. You know, the only autoimmune diet we know, the only autoimmune disease we know the cause is celiac. And again, it's interesting, though, because those patients sometimes come in when they're eating gluten, a low weight. And when they eat gluten-free, they actually gain weight because their body is absorbing their calories that they weren't before. And they're
right. But I was just listening to you say too, that if they go gluten-free, when people eliminate gluten, their bowel works better, they absorb more, they gain weight. But what if they don't have celiac, but they're eating the higher calorie gluten-free food?
Yeah, exactly.
New twist.
It is celiac month, by the way. I forgot to say May is celiac awareness month. So it's like the last day.
Yes. Go Emily. We have a great celiac study department at in Jefferson GI, so people should be aware of that. Great research from Dr. DiMarino and now Dr. Stephanie Molesky. So the autoimmune protocol, let's talk about that. We know that inflammation is connected with risk, or we think that it increases the risk for many cancers like breast cancer and lots of cancers and heart disease. So this is not necessarily a fad diet, but we still have to work out the details of it. But it's the autoimmune protocol is meant to decrease inflammation and pain and other symptoms associated with autoimmune disorders. Let's talk about that. There's an elimination phase.
Right. So that's the one thing I like about this diet, even though it's a little bit restrictive, at least you can reintroduce the foods that you restricted. Where those other diets, the paleo and the keto, you're never reintroducing according to their, you know, to their recommendations. So it's very similar. Again, we're avoiding grains. They're actually avoiding nuts and seeds, eggs, and all dairy. So again, here we're eliminating a lot of, you know, healthy fats, some protein, calcium. Again, everyone wants to eliminate dairy. And then you can't even get the calcium from the nuts, you know, from the nut milks because they don't want you to have nuts. Again, but it's 30 to 60 days that you follow this diet. And they also recommend the nightshade vegetables. Tom Brady's a big fan of this. I don't know if I am, but tomatoes, eggplants, and potatoes. So I don't, and peppers, which again, these are all
healthy. And to avoid them, you avoid
the
nightshade?
Yes, that's part of the elimination phase with the autoimmune.
For
inflammation. People want to feel better. And sometimes even if diet is a placebo, that's fine. We just don't want to be too restrictive.
Yeah. So,
you know, we're adding again more vegetables. They add the fermented foods too. So you're allowed to have, you can't have dairy, but you can have kefir and kombucha, but
kombucha.
I don't know. You can't have yogurt.
Kefir,
can't have dairy.
Yogurt.
I don't know.
So you would eliminate those nightshade veggies, grains, nuts, seeds, eggs, dairy.
But it's third, because I had a patient on this recently a couple of weeks ago. So then we talked about bringing back the foods.
Yeah, and she was supposed to say like 30 to 60 or 30 to 90 days. And then you focus on what we think are the anti-inflammatory foods, like fresh veggies. And you mentioned fermented foods. I guess the idea is that you're healing the gut by removing problematic ingredients.
Yeah, and which again, a gut.
This is
more sensitivity. This diet I do mainly. It's more. A lot of times, it's more for like brain fog and headaches, migraines. joint pain. It's not my GI symptoms that ever follow this diet. I will say that. This is all sort of those vague symptoms that people get when they eat certain foods, but not GI. GI, I use FODMAP, and that's 80% effective. This is really on pain and associated symptoms, joint pain, inflammation. A lot of the holistic dietitians and herbal dietitians do this. It's not something that I do very often because I don't think there's a lot of research based on it. And I just feel like it's restrictive, and I want to make sure my patients reintroduce.
So again, the research on this is in its early stages, and let your physician know that you're trying some of these things. But in the literature I was reading about that, it said that eliminating gluten, well, they're saying they want to eliminate gluten in some of these people as well, but I don't know. I think it's better to be sure that you really have to eliminate gluten, because if you go to the gluten-free food products, you might be, you know, cutting yourself short.
Right. Yes. I mean, I think it's gluten. All these diets eliminate dairy, and this diet eliminates dairy and nuts. So then, where you're going to get your calcium sources? If you can't get it from almond milk.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You can't. I mean, you could do you can't do soy. You could do coconut milk, which has a lot of fat and nut. They don't have protein. You could do pea protein milk. You can't do cheese. You can't do yogurt. So
let's talk about the best diets, because what we don't finish now, we can take into our final segment. But Weight Watchers, now it's known as WW. I think that's so brilliant.
Did Oprah change that?
Yeah, maybe. But
she can't be on it anymore because she now takes Ozempic, so she felt it was a, you know, conflict of interest.
Well, they assign points to foods based on their nutritional value,
right?
And then you get a calorie budget to spend on different foods. It's so clever. But I think the other really cool thing about Weight Watchers is that you show up, that you go to the weekly meeting and weigh in. Yes.
No. Well, so I think that all changed really since COVID. I think a lot of it is virtual now. So you could have a week. I don't think they don't go to the site. They might do it online. They might meet people with online, but most of it's online. There are some centers.
So it's honor system. Cause you could have a screen over your scale and say, oh, it really says, you know, 140, not 180.
I like the points. Whatever. You know, because it's easy for people. There's a couple downfalls with it. A, they give you unlimited points for fruit. So you can eat 20 bananas a day and it's free points. I don't, you know, I still think we just want to get out of that mindset of overeating kind of thing or eating too many foods.
Yes.
They give you back activity points. So if you walk an hour, they'll give it back to you. My thinking is exercise alone does not really help with weight loss. It's a combination of less calories and moving. And these people on Weight Watchers, they're not, you know, they're not running marathons. They're, you know, doing daily living, you know, a little bit of biking and walking, just daily activity. So I think we need to keep those points. And they have, they also have free protein points because you're going to feel more satisfied with protein foods. I like that, but I don't think anything should really be free in terms of eating as much as you want. I still think we have to figure out how to feel full and not overeat, because then our bodies are used to eating.
So that's important too, Em, for people to hear that protein makes you feel full. You think of fiber making you feel full, but protein makes you feel full. As you said earlier, instead of just munching on and grazing on nuts and such, make a small meal, a little salad with some, you know, strips of chicken.
Well, nuts would be, because nuts, they have a combination of protein. They're a high fat protein on a list. Mm-hmm. So, but the problem with them is I think people eat too many of them. They're just an easy food to eat a lot of. I actually recommend like a dry roasted edamame, which is like half the calories and more protein and more fiber. Mm-hmm. So I like the combination. Protein and fiber are my favorite, you know, combinations of food. I even say, again, to do a sandwich or to do, you know, even like a sweet potato with some grilled chicken or vegetables.
So again, Weight Watchers emphasizes moderation, portion control, and includes all food groups. That's where I put my thumbs up, because there is, as you always say, there is no bad food. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, your weekly prescription.
Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie is presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
And we're in our final segment of Your Radio Doctor with my favorite dietitian, nutritionist, master's in public health, colleague, Emily Rubin from Jefferson Health. Emily, we learned so much about intermittent fasting, keto diet, and we were just talking about the values of Weight Watchers. Let's talk about some of the other best diets, like the Mediterranean diet. That seems to be your favorite, the longstanding winner.
It is. It is definitely my favorite diet because, you know, the studies, every study, you know, shows that it helps, you know, Alzheimer's, brain health, cardiovascular. But my biggest concern with it is how we're actually doing it. You know what I mean? Like, people don't really understand. We don't live in the Mediterranean. We're not shopping every day to buy these fresh foods. We're not walking.
So you're not walking to the store.
Right. And, you know, it allows X amount of wine, which these are things that we have to watch. I can't have my patients drink wine. And it allows unlimited olive oil, which, again, a great fat, healthy fat. But when my patients do too much of it, I've seen it contribute to weight gain because it's not really focusing on calories. It's focusing on balance and choosing the right foods like the fish and vegetables and whole grains.
So it's whole foods.
Whole foods, right.
And as you say, healthy fats like olive oil, lean proteins, and lots of fruits and veggies. Does cooking of fruits and veggies kill the vitamins sometimes? I meant to ask you that in other conversations. Can you overcook veggies and kill some of the nutrients? Is that an old wives' tale?
You can if you cook it too long. But they make a lot of these steam in the bag vegetables now. So and it's not processed. It's just the vegetable. Actually, sometimes blanched vegetables frozen are healthier than the fresh ones because they're not sitting on the shelf as long. So there are certain vegetables, for instance, carrots and spinach, it increases their beta carotene and their vitamin C when you cook them. It's actually higher content. So it can actually increase the nutrients in that food. It just depends on the person. And I mean, I find also frozen vegetables last a lot longer. So if people are busy, they already can have them. I have a great recipe where I throw frozen vegetables in the air fryer and they taste like crunchy, like you're eating like something fried with a little bit of seasoning on it. And my patients like love it. You know, you're almost eating like a chip or a French fry, but it's a pure vegetable in the air fryer. I try to go over recipes too, because, you know.
Oh, I know you do. You're just outstanding, Emily. The DASH diet, dietary approaches to stop hypertension. So it was designed, I guess, to include low sodium foods, whole grains, lean protein, fruits and veggies, because we want to lower that blood pressure and it supports weight loss. What about the volumetrics diet?
Yeah, let me just go back to the DASH. So the DASH is like the Mediterranean, but also it's lower sodium. So again, you're not getting you're not going to get canned beans. You're going to get things lower sodium. But they've done studies if you can eat less, which is hard. If you can eat less than 700 milligrams of sodium per day, I'll give you an example. A teaspoon of salt is 2,300 milligrams of sodium. That's a low salt diet. Most Americans eat anywhere from 5,000 to 10,000 milligrams of sodium. So they've shown studies if you can eat less than 700 per day, which is really tough. It's adding very little seasonings, like all the salt free seasonings, and not eating out, that has lowered your blood pressure, you know, in combination with this diet.
Plus, you know what? You find sodium in the craziest places. Like some colas have sodium in them.
Right, right. I mean, anything that's in a box or bag, but you can find low sodium, you know, less low sodium is considered less than 125 milligrams. It's actually still in the hundreds.
We have about a minute left, Em. Volumetrics diet, food with low energy density. I'm not sure what that means exactly, but they're high in water.
Yeah, it means low energy. It's low cal. It's high energy, nutrient dense food or low. Is this low energy? It's low calorie foods that like the free foods, like lots of vegetables.
So high
and
in water and fiber.
Don't have a lot of calories.
You feel full. And finally,
similar to the Weight Watchers zero.
The flexitarian diet. Plant-based meals with occasional meat.
Yeah, they call it like meatless Mondays. So the new thing is to not have, again, sort of going against the keto, but to do more of the plant-based protein. So if you want to do, you know, not like veggie burgers, but maybe, you know, tofu, rice and beans, adding more plant-based proteins that are not processed, making a black bean burger kind of thing yourself if you can, or buying ones that are less processed.
That sounds reasonable.
Yes, exactly.
Just another meatless Monday. Okay, Emily, is there any website you send people to?
Yeah, I mean, there's like, again, the American Heart Association. There's a Skinny Taste has some really great recipes that I like for some of my patients to look at, which, you know, has all these different diets that are geared that are balanced diet as well. These Americans, if you're looking for a dietitian too, you can go to eatright.org and you can find a dietitian in your area that, you know, can definitely help you as well.
Eatright.org. Beautiful. With that, Emily, thank you. You are a walking encyclopedia. I can't thank you enough. We always learn so much from you.
Sure. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor every Saturday afternoon at 5 here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Listen to any of our shows again or the Real Champion segments on Audacy.com, AUDACY.com. A special thank you to our exclusive sponsor, Independence Blue Cross, and we enjoy our association with Helio.com, the medical information platform with the most current medical news and information. Learn more about intermittent fasting on Helio.com. An article from April 20 of this year called Diet Quality Still Matters with the Popular Weight Loss Technique of Intermittent Fasting. A very special thank you to all of our listeners who participated in our diaper drive for needy mothers. Diapers for Darlings collected over $4,000 in diapers and supplies, and we're truly grateful to all of you who donated. We'll be sponsoring Diapers for Darlings again in the fall. The diapers are delivered to Catholic Social Services and are shared with people of all faiths. Next week, join us for an update on the latest therapies for prostate cancer. Great news about focal therapy. In many cases, new therapies can address the cancer in a much less invasive way. Our guest will be Dr. Patrick Gamella from Jefferson Health. And please continue to pray for peace in our world, peace in our beloved country, peace in our families, and in each of our own hearts. This is your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, wishing you a happy, healthy, and safe week with the ones you love. Always here to remind you that your health is your wealth.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross. To contact Dr. Marianne and to listen to today's show as well as past shows, visit YourRadioDoctor.com. This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.